You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 3rd of December. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Alex Dace, I want to touch on Barloworld. I want to touch on Anglo-American. Both of them have had massive weeks so far. Anglo going back to those 2008 highs. Capital appreciation results as the war on cash heats up under lockdown. And then talking to Future Growth on investing into township malls, a whole different sort of category in the REIT space. Wednesday's question we asked you under lockdown, were you still adding to your investments? 75% of you said yes, always, and absolute kudos to you. 7% of you said no, you were worried. And let's be honest, back in March, there was a lot to be worried for. And 18% said you wanted to but couldn't. And fair shot, 2020 has been a tough, tough year. MoneyWeb Now brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Some morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Sasol forging ahead. Management gets really spelt out their plans quite nicely. They've made some real promises. It's a long road still to travel, but it does look like that 2021 rights issue is not going to be at the $2 billion range. It's still probably going to be out there, but it'll be a lot smaller, and that is good for Sasol. Remember I chat with Petri on Monday? He said, Sasol, $400. Not in a hurry, but $400. CNBC, bill forcing Chinese firms to meet U.S. accounting standards passes Congress. It's not aimed at China, but this might see some of the accounting, some of the Chinese companies listed in the U.S. perhaps having to delist. I mean, Alibaba, PetroChina, two of the biggies there. We'll watch this one closely. It's partly that sort of trade wars, but actually it's even more than just trade wars and worth keeping an eye on. Morning markets, U.S. was mixed, S&P up 0.2%, NASDAQ down 0.05%, so just a smidgen. Asia's green, Sydney 0.4% up, and Turkey down literally a couple of points. Commodities, red, gold doing well, 1838, 1860, that's the number it needs to recover. Rand, 1529, top 40 opening call, looking for a green open about a third of a percent, sorry, 0.75% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Alex Dace, portfolio manager at Mthombo Wealth. Alex, morning. Appreciate your time. I mentioned Barloworld there in the intro. Results came out Monday. Market didn't like the results, marked it down to a degree. And then the last 2 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Barlow's gone from 70 to over 90. Are we missing something or is someone just piling in? What's your take on Barloworld at the moment after those results?
Morning, Simon. And if you take actually over the last month, Barloworld is up about 50%. Yeah. So it's certainly been a massive move there. I know a lot of fund managers beginning of the year, as well as hedge fund managers, saw Barloworld as one of the top shorts for the year, mostly due to disillusionment with management strategy and so forth. And I was even before COVID. But I think this set of results really surprised from a cash generation perspective. It was phenomenal cash generation. Also a lot more de-gearing. And better operational performance than expected. And I think there's a lot of short covering, firstly, that's happened that's really caused it. And perhaps some investors that didn't want to invest in it started to buy as well. So I think a combination of those two factors. I mean, the free cash flow yield was also very, very high on the last set of results. So I think market just saw that, you know, maybe perhaps the worst is certainly not the case at Barlow's. And, you know, and also the management highlighted that they want to focus a bit more on the core businesses going forward and so forth. I think there was big concerns that the management team is looking to build a new conglomerate. And as a result, that would have led to a much larger discount, et cetera. So the more focused approach will certainly be liked by the market, and we're seeing it now. But I think the rally is probably a bit ahead of steam at the moment. So I won't be chasing at these levels, but certain investment fees, it looks a lot better for Barlow World than it was a few months ago.
Yeah, that was really good cash, and I take your point, particularly if you're seeing some short covering, a bit of panicking, perhaps up at 90 Rand, don't chase it. It'll probably come back. You might like the stock, you can get it at a better price, and then you will like it a whole lot more. Another company which hitting 52-week highs, but truthfully actually hitting way more than that, is Anglo-American, 485 Rand. Truthfully, it's on track for those 2008 highs, which is what, about 5.50 back under the days of Cynthia Carroll. We're seeing resources, and not gold, we'll park gold aside. We're seeing resources, we're seeing iron ore having a really, really good week, and Anglo having a spectacular run. The stock was, what, almost 200 earlier in the lockdown, and now it's 485.
Yes, agreed. And you also look at relative to Billet, and initially at the beginning of the year it underperformed, but since then it's really reversed. It's outperforming Billet and quite comfortably at the moment. And the reason for that is we look at the underlying commodities. So Anglo-American, of course, has got big exposure to platinum, which is doing very well, as we know. Copper, which is hitting back to all-time highs again, or recent highs we also had about a decade ago. And, of course, iron ore just keeps on being resilient. Every single time I speak to someone about iron ore, the indication is it's going to pull back. It simply hasn't happened. And if you take the spot earnings, and the longer it stays at spot earnings, it means that these resource companies will make super profits. And as a result, Anglo-American has rallied quite hard. Initially, I had some concerns about Anglo-American recently because I thought, you know, they might be spending a lot more on CapEx and they're not going to get the high dividends and so forth. But it seems like the market is just looking past this and say, well, spot earnings is going to be fantastic. You know, they've got a strong management team, great assets. And yeah, the stock has just rallied. Very hard from these levels.
And Billiton almost on the wrong side of those commodities. A lot of energy, we know what's happened there. Platinum, copper, iron ore, they've been having absolute record year and not giving up. And iron ore with the Australia-China challenges, that might also be got a lot more legs to it. We'll leave that there. Alex Dace from Mfumbo Wealth, appreciate the early morning.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place? Offshore, while earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP. Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Alan Solomon. He's a CFO at Capital Appreciation. Results out yesterday for 6 months end September. Revenue up 15%. HEPS up 29.7%. Nice operational leverage there. Dividend of 2.5 cents. That's up from 2.25 the previous year. Alan, morning. Appreciate the time. We chatted back in June, and in that set of results, your chair, Michael Sachs, had commented that in 50-odd years of professional corporate life, current state is the most difficult I've encountered. We're not out of the woods, but this reporting period, which is that lockdown period, has come through really strongly for the group. It's been a good 6 months, notwithstanding, I imagine, were serious challenges.
Good morning, Simon. Thanks once again for having me on the radio. This has been sure a very interesting 6 month reporting period. We really are pleased with our strategic plans and initiatives that we created when we first listed, was that we were going to build a business that had a medium to long-term progressive plan attached to it. And therefore, we put substantial amount of investment and effort into building infrastructure capacity and into area the technologies and intellectual property that would allow us to maximize our position in a changing world. And this is now reflected in these results.
I mean, I take your point. You come into it. You come into a pandemic with a good plan, with good strength in the business. You come out the other side perhaps stronger. And crudely, in the US, they talk around the war on cash and that sort of PayPal that would be Square. It's also Visa and MasterCard. And in a sense, that's where you're operating with your terminal business. How much of growth this year was sort of normal growth that would normally have happened versus perhaps an extra bit that you got from pandemic?
No, I think we had a sustainable pipeline as we closed off the financial year at the end of March. And we also were able virtually instantaneously to transition our business from being the old normal to the new normal.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really indicative of all the plans and all the actions that we've done in the past. And I think one of the key areas as well is that we are a very conservative business and very cautious in our day-to-day deliberations. And accordingly, we always wanted to make sure that we could keep focused on the business and not have to worry about non-income producing type activity like debt restructuring or worrying about available cash and the like. So I think we've got a good balance sheet, we've got a wonderful management team, and we were resilient during the six-month period.
Yeah, and that comes back to my earlier point in a moment. Yeah, if a company comes into a pandemic and they're perhaps sailing a little close to the wind, it makes it really, really difficult. But if you come in, and I like your phrase, this might be tech, this might be, you know, mobile payments and the like, but if you come in with strong balance sheets and sort of old-fashioned style of business, then, you know, pandemics are not fun, but they're manageable and they're easy enough to, maybe not easy enough, but they're certainly able to be navigated by the management team.
Absolutely. I think this calendar year of 2020, you've got two characteristics. You have a pre-COVID, very weak and low growth and underperforming economy,
mm-hmm.
which was exacerbated by COVID. And inter alia, you have to have your businesses have to be in good shape and have to be in a ready state to counter any threat. And I think that's really where we've, as my founding partners, have deliberated on, is to make sure that we didn't fall over in the event of adverse market conditions or a catastrophe like the COVID delivered.
A last question. Your services division, you make the point that you experienced elongated sales cycles as client engagement was virtual. They were more deliberate in what they were doing. I imagine client relationships, existing relationships, were significantly important during this period to enable suddenly doing things on Zoom rather than face-to-face and helping sort of work out what they actually needed and how to implement.
Yes. The current economic, let alone post-COVID type scenario. I think most of our customers, we didn't lose any orders, we didn't have any changes in our business patterning, our supplier and our customer relations remained completely intact. I think customers have now just become a bit cautious and prioritized their spends to the immediate scenario as opposed to what they need to continue to spend in the medium and the long term.
We'll leave that there. That's Alan Solomon. He's CFO at Capital Appreciation. Really appreciate the time this morning. My question to you on Twitter this morning, the war on cash. Are you still using cash or are you going electronic only? Options are cash is over. I still like cash. I fall into that category. I know. I'm sorry. And wish I had me some cash. At MoneyWeb now, hashtag us and find us on the Twitter.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on the Money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Smitor Rumbi. He is Future Growth, works at Future Growth. He runs the Future Growth Community Property Composite, which is a fund investing into malls in sort of rural areas, townships, which is not the traditional space for people investing. Smitor, I appreciate your time today. The fund was launched back in 1996. I mean, back then there was truthfully little or no development in our townships, in our rural areas of South Africa. But over the life of the fund, it's proved itself to be a very viable and, quite frankly, a very defensive investment strategy.
Correct. Thanks, Simon, for you know, interviewing and taking the time out. I think this fund has been under the radar for quite some time. And you know, back in 96, as I said, there was no development out in townships and rural areas. We saw an opportunity, you know, first of all, to create employment, mm-hmm. you know, during the construction phase as well as post-construction, because, you know, retailers and the center need staff to run it daily. And, you know, currently 80% of all our employment in our shopping centers comes from the direct local community. So not only are you providing, you know, more affordable retail to communities and bringing them closer, you're also creating employment and growth in the economy.
Yeah, that obviously that employment, that growth is hugely important. I mean, the other, you know, a small thing which occurred to me is it's a saving on transport. You know, if you're in a rural area, if you're in a township and you have to get to the city. That's an expense. It's actually, there's a triple benefit of that. Also puts cash back into the community, which they're probably then going to, in part, spend at those malls.
And that's 100% correct. You know, we looked at, I mean, when we look at, you know, purchasing shopping centers or, you know, entering into a development partnership, we look at factors where communities are far removed from urban kind of areas to mm-hmm. access facilities. And I think one of the key backbones of our economy and is that, you know, the social grant system is quite big. And, you know, if you look at a pension payout these days, it's roughly about plus minus 1,700 Rand, a government pension. And, you know, if you have to travel 30 to 40 kilometers to obtain that grant, you're eating away all of that disposable income and less in the consumer's pocket.
And that adds to that defensive nature. I mean, you know, obviously there'll be essential goods, essential services available. These are going to be cash customers. As you mentioned, a lot of that is going to be the grants received from government, making these malls a lot more defensive than perhaps your typical mall in sort of Hyde Park or Cavendish Square, which is going to be at the vagrancies of the broader economic activity.
Correct. I mean, we don't have a lot of, you know, high-end brands. You know, you won't find a Gucci or Armani store at these shopping centers. And, you know, those are kind of discretionary kind of spends. You look at the core of our retail focus, it's on essential goods. And like you said, you know, we've been quite defensive because it proved very much in the lockdown under level 5. Mm-hmm. Our shopping centers, you know, were resilient because, you know, people need to buy groceries. And, you know, online retail didn't really penetrate our portfolio because, you know, the majority of our consumers living in townships and rural areas, if you look at online retail, they can't really receive online deliveries efficiently due to the logistics. They can't afford bulk online purchases to make online retail feasible. So, I mean, our consumers spend on average 30 to 100 Rand per day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our centers, you know, just naturally have foot traffic because of the, you know, economic circumstances of our consumers.
Yeah, and I hadn't thought of that. I mean, obviously our traditional malls online is hurting. I mean, if I think about the sort of lockdown we've been in, I think I've been to a big mall maybe once or twice. My shopping has shifted online. That's not going to happen in a rural or a township area. We've also got the challenge in the urban areas. We are truthfully manically overtraded with malls, be they sort of mid-size or the super malls that we have in our major metros.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely correct. I mean, we found often the areas in which we operate, especially in the rural areas, we don't have a lot of competition. I think to set up a shopping center out in the rural areas, the development, you know, before development even commences, sometimes it can take 7 to 10 years just to establish a site for mm-hmm. development. Whereas if you're in an urban area, develop a new mall could take you, you know, 2 to 3 years, you know, in planning stages before you start constructing. So, you know, a lot of patience is needed in this game.
Yeah, it is a patient game. I get that. And you've got, what, 32 located in various different rural areas, townships across the country built up. What interested me is it's not only necessarily purchasing. You also, if I understand correctly, actually doing that development, so identifying areas and starting as from scratch.
Yeah, so maybe to correct, the 32 mm-hmm. shopping centers has been over the life of the 20 years.
Gotcha.
We currently have 20 shopping centers in the fund, and, you know, and we operate in 8 of the 9 provinces. Just in terms of the developments, we run our funds similar to the REITs in that we're more income focused. So
okay.
We prefer buying completed developments, but where we see an opportunity to do an expansion, we do that ourselves with our partners, Capital Land, which is a property management company. And we try to stay away from doing complete greenfields developments because we can become focused. And, you know, if you do a development from scratch, it is obviously an income drain for our investors, which are predominantly pension funds.
Gotcha. And I mean, looking at the returns, and because of the process, it launched in earlier, but it's effectively launching 1 January. But the point is with the returns is that it manages to give, and when I look at the chart of return, it is giving what it says on the sticker, which is that nice, steady, predictable, to your point, income-generating return over the long term.
Yeah. I mean, look, if I just give you a breakdown of the returns over the last 20 years, this fund's generated return of CPI plus 8,
mm-hmm.
And that's on an ungeared basis. So, you know, it just demonstrates we're very much long-term focused. We, you know, when we do acquisitions, it's not about, you know, whether the initial yield on a property looks attractive. It's whether that income growth is sustainable and whether we see growth in the area in which the shopping center is located. So, you know, when we do our due diligence, it doesn't just go to the fact that, oh, there's good leases in place. It looks at the economic drivers of the area and you know, sustainable industries around that to further support the growth.
Yeah, and CPI plus 8, ungeared, solid return. We'll leave that there. Really appreciate the time. Smital Rambaez, Future Growth Community Property Composite. Really appreciate the time. And that's it. A couple of stocks. I mean, we were talking there. I mean, obviously, some of the, you know, this is not an easily investable. This is for the pension funds. But Fairvest, Safari, Vukile, they've all got space, in particular, looking at in township properties. And it certainly is an interesting space in the REIT part of the market. This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 29. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Phoenix, Arizona. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider with license number 50483. Our poll, Warren Cash, are you still using cash or electronic only? Answer us on Twitter at MoneyWeb. I see a couple of you are suggesting Bitcoin, far too volatile to use for spending. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the app. Podcast available, website, app, or wherever you get great podcasts from. That from 7 o'clock. A huge thanks to my team, Eddie and Cordora, to my guests for their time, for you for listening. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the money.